Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
We're back with another episode of Mouthing Off, the theater arts and culture podcast for the Twin Cities and beyond, even the suburbs, Shoreview, Roseville. I don't want to leave anybody. Duluth,
Shakopee, St. Louis Park.
There you go. All the suburbs. I'm Kevin Couchman, and this is my co-host, Amanda Forstrom. Amanda, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm so excited to have a returning guest on the pod, one of our favorite actors and artists of all time. Yes, Kevin?
A repeat offender.
Repeat offender. Yes, guilty as charged is Matt Sachs.
Oh,
Matt,
no.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Third time doing this now? Doing Mouthing Off?
That means
this is going to be
the best episode.
It's a charm.
Yeah,
I hope people are charmed. And of course, we're on Frogtown Radio, Minnesota Playlist. We are Bad Mouth Theater Company, badmouthtc.com. There's a whole archive of Mouthing Off episodes you can find on Spotify, on our website, on Apple. There, if you go way back in the catalog, there are even some recorded plays that we did. We may have another one of those this summer. We're kind of making plans. It's going to be an international joint. We're working with the British are coming. The British are coming. That's all I'm going to say about that. We'll see what is going to happen. But Matt, let's just start with immediately cut to the chase. I hear you're having a hecuba time.
You were waiting for that all day, weren't you, Kevin?
All week.
Wow. Well, yes. As Kevin has said, so I don't know how to put how he said it. I am currently performing a play called Hecuba by Marina Carr, an Irish woman playwright. It's an adaptation, her spin on the original, you know, plays by Euripides from Greece. And it's playing at the Southern Theater in the, you know, Cedar West Side area, Cedar Riverside area, you know, down Washington Avenue in Minneapolis with Pangea World Theater. And we're in our, right now in our, I just did a student matinee this morning at 10 a.m. on the morning of Tuesday, April 16th. And we've got four performances left coming up Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 2:30.
All right. And where can people get tickets?
You can go to the Pangea World Theater website, and they have a ticket link with, I think it's Zeki. You can also, if you follow Pangea on socials like Facebook and Instagram, you can just click on there and you'll be able to go to links to buy tickets. They do a sliding scale, so they try and make it affordable. If the sliding scale lowest level, which I believe is $18, is still a little like, they're like, well, I also have to pay for parking and I have to figure out my finances and, you know, maybe a babysitter or something like that. Contact them, reach out to them. You know, they don't want financial barriers to inhibit you from seeing the show. So you can reach out to them. And they also might still need ushers. If you volunteer to usher, you can see the show for free. You can reach out to them that way too. So they want you to be able to see the show. They believe in accessibility in that way. They have a really wonderful mindset philosophy there in every way. And so that's one of the things that's say about the show. You can see it. Don't let financial barriers or concerns be a barrier. they want you to come and see it.
I co-sign all of that. I think that's great. And if the American theater is having an audience problem, maybe the American theater has to think about its side of the audience problem and how we can make it more inviting. Yeah.
I think that's a big thing. Like I've said before when I was on, you know, accessibility is one of my biggest things with theater, you know, whether it's material we're doing, which doesn't mean talking down to an audience, not making an audience feel like they need to have an encyclopedic knowledge of subject matter or, you know, theater in and of itself to go and see a show, or whether it's financials and people saying, oh, these tickets are affordable. They're only $30. That to me isn't in the range of like for everyday people to be affordable to go able to go on a consistent basis. So if we do need to look internally about, you know, are we being elitist? Are we being snotty? Or, you know, obviously we have, you know, theaters have budgets they have to make and we want them to pay their staff and performers, you know, a living wage. So you have to account for all that. But without an audience, it's not going to happen. So we have to give them ability in the material. And that doesn't mean not challenging, but accessibility with materials, whether it's study guides or information, or making them feel comfortable coming and not talking down to them or making them feel it'll go over their heads. And we have to give them, you know, ways to be able to afford to go so that they can become consistent audience members.
Let me also volunteer something, a radical idea. We also need to entertain them.
Yes. If it's not any good, people don't like it, they're not going to come back.
If you know what, you gotta sometimes, you know, and we want to use theater to feed people their broccoli sometimes, right? There's time, there's room for a message. There's room for it, but man, you maybe want to sprinkle some cheese on that broccoli, you know?
Midwestern cheese.
Yeah, right. Yep.
It's a spoonful of sugar thing, you know, like if you know, I've seen plays that have good intentions from people and other kinds of performances. Won't say specific people or production. But I've seen things where I'm like, okay, I can see what they're trying to say. You know, it's pretty clear what they're trying to say. In some cases, it's like a sledgehammer inside the skull, clear what they're trying to say. But often I haven't liked it. It's been too much. It's been not entertaining. It's been pretentious. It's been, you know, in some ways obnoxious. And I feel like sitting there with audience people watching, you know, I watch the show, but I also am glancing around at people across the stage from me or around me a little bit. And I can see people like looking bored, miserable that they got dragged. And that's the last thing I think we want.
Yeah. And I totally agree. And I think that's one thing about this playwright that I love. And I came across Marina Carr. She's an Irish playwright and she wrote By the Bog of Cats.
Yes.
And which is a beautiful, beautiful play. And she's written, I don't know, probably 20, 25 works or something like that. But she makes these really epic stories and boils them down for the average person, but still keeps that sense of epic connectedness, whether we're American or Irish or, you know, French or whatever. She just has a beautiful way of weaving those stories. And I love it.
Well, so let me get into a question based on that. I don't know her work. I've heard of that play you mentioned, Amanda, but let's get into it, right? So sure. Matt, pitch me Hecuba. Why this play? Why now? Why this production? If I'm thinking, hey, what am I going to do this weekend in the Twin Cities or the, you know, suburbs? I mean, what's going to lure me into Minneapolis? Give us a pitch.
Sure. Hecuba. Yeah. It's the story of the Queen of Troy, and it literally starts taking place. Our play starts literally on the night of the Greeks coming out of the Trojan horse and conquering Troy. And the play chronicles what happens that night. And then we flash forward maybe a couple weeks later, where the Greek army has taken all the Trojan women and princesses, Hecuba and her two daughters, prisoner. And enslave them. And now they're on the beaches of Thrace trying to get home. And what Rina Kaur has done with this version has made it focused on the women. Focuses on Hecuba, Queen of Troy, the fallen queen who's lost all her sons in the war and lost her husband the night of the play starts. And it asks questions about war, questions about women and their lives, and it asks questions about our children. It asks questions about genocide. It asks the question I think a lot of great plays get at: what part of being a human, what can you forgive, what can you live with, how do we go on? If you're a parent, how do you go on after your children have been killed in the worst possible ways imaginable? So it's deep, it's dark, you know. It doesn't mean it's not entertaining. It doesn't mean that it won't move you. It's deeply moving. It's deeply beautiful. If Rina Kaur, you know, the play that Amanda mentioned was By the Bog of Cats, which was her kind of adaptation of Medea, set with Irish, in the Irish countryside. And set in a, I guess I would say like contemporary or almost contemporary Ireland. Mm-hmm.
And I think she wrote it in 98.
Yeah, I believe that's true. And I saw it in 2008 when Frank Theater did it in the studio. And just recently, Theater Pro Rata did a production of it.
Mm.
He, with this Hecuba, you know, like I said, it's based on, it's a story that fascinated the Greeks. And Euripides, the playwright in Athens, wrote versions of it. He was so fascinated with the story, he wrote two versions of it to ask questions in his own time about war and what Athens was doing in its wars and everything. And so now with this version, why now? Well, I mean, there's a lot of things going on, and violence and war have always been part of humanity. So how we behave and what the consequences of our actions are in war, and also what the responsibilities of leaders are in war, are all things. Me, the heart and soul of it is, as parents, how do we go on? Both Hecuba, the Queen of Troy, with the loss of her children, and the character I play, which is Agamemnon, who is, if you're familiar with Greek mythology, was the king of Mycenae and the king of kings of all the Greek kings and princes and lords who fought at Troy. He was the general and commander in chief of all the heroes that you have heard about in Greek mythology. So Achilles, Ajax, and Odysseus, the Odyssey, Odysseus, who is in our play and played wonderfully by Tyler Stamm. He was their commander in chief, and he had the burden of responsibility leading all these thousands and thousands of men in this war that his brother had instigated when his wife, Helen of Troy, was kidnapped by a prince of Troy. But Rina Kaur kind of addresses that right off the bat, so I don't want to give away things, but she deviates from what you might have known from the Greek myths. But if you don't know the Greek myths, don't worry. Everything's laid out for you. You don't have to know anything about Greek myth. You don't have to have seen the movie Troy. You don't have, which has actions that cross over in our play, honestly, they do. You don't have to have read a single book or know anything about Greek myth, as Rina Kaur really does a wonderful job of laying things out in the first three or four pages, what's happening, what's going on, and who these people are. And then she progresses and you learn who they are.
If you don't know the background of Euripides, he is pretty widely regarded as the greatest of the Greek playwrights. I think he won the prize, the big prize, the most times. And, you know, scholarship, I adapted Iphigenia for Red Eye many, many years ago. And so I learned a bit, you know, about Euripides and his life and the, you know, what I learned, you know, it's been a while. But we find a lot of there's a lot of modern resonance with his work. There's a feeling that he had more of what we would call a modern sensibility. So in a way, he may be more accessible. I think young people maybe roll their eyes. Why do I care about this old Greek drama? Why is this done all the time? You know, even Shakespeare might feel a little closer because it's English. You can sort of understand, like, okay, this is our great poet of the language we speak. But why these Greeks? Well, Greeks invented Western civilization, and Greeks invented theater as we practice it, more or less. So for that reason, plays like this to me are really resonant and really important. And Matt, getting back to that other concept we were talking about before, this idea of sort of the broccoli theater, mm-hmm. and maybe how we have to avoid it. I think one thing as theater people we can remember now that's so critical is that the very act of making theater now, the very act of attending theater now is radical. As more and more time is being and attention is being sucked into screens, devices, and believe me, I am a device lover. I am a screen lover. I love my movies. I love my iPhone. I do. I'm not going to lie. I'm an addict, right? For sure. But it's like, that for me is one of the very important reasons to like just stay connected. Just the act of going, I don't care if it's a throwaway comedy, you know, there is no such thing as a throwaway comedy. Do you follow? Are you with me?
I am. Going to say, like, there's so much that you just said that I love, because going, I'll circle back. Yeah. Iphigenia comes up in our play. And if you're not familiar with that, we touch on that for sure. Why do we do these works by ancient Greece? Like, you know, some of what you said is what I said to the students, to the high school students at the matinee. You know, they asked, you know, like, what about this play, you know, is meaningful to you? I believe that was kind of one of the questions. You know, one of the questions was, what do you find, one of your not favorite parts? They put it in a good way, but they were asking, like, why, what's rewarding about this work? You know, what is it? And I was like, well, when you do and see plays from ancient Greece or based on the stories of ancient Greece, you're going all the way back to the original true creators of what we consider the theater of Western civilization. I mean, these are the stories that still inspire us. I mean, there's a reason why Marina Carr adapted Medea mm-hmm. into the Bog of Cats. There's a reason why she took on the Hecuba story. There's a reason why there are modern adaptations of things like Oedipus Rex, you know, which is probably Sophocles, you know, greatest work. There's reasons why we go back to these ancient Greek myths and stories, get at the heart and soul of people. You know, they still mean something. They still emotionally connect. And when we do a work like this, it you're seeing those stories that it's amazing to think about. Like, these are stories and characters that have gone back thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and we're watching them today. And what they go through today still resonates, still moves us, can still capture our minds and hearts, and so entertain us. Because, you know, Euripides wasn't just lecturing. He was trying to entertain the audiences. He wouldn't have won prizes and awards if the audiences hadn't responded and been moved by his work. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing today, too. And yeah, in this day and age, it is radical to get together a live audience and see live people performing on stage when we have options that are entertaining. There's nothing wrong with film. You know, every movies, there's nothing wrong with TV. There's nothing wrong with being on your iPhone and watching something on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram. Those are all things that are entertaining and can give you, if they give you joy, if they make you happy. And I'm sure there's at least something in some form of media that does for almost everyone. By all means, enjoy that. But, you know, I've said this before. I don't know if I said it on the podcast, but also, there's something special about seeing live performers on stage, especially when you're in a market like Minneapolis or your local market, whether you live like in Birmingham, Alabama, or New Orleans, or in Washington, D.C., or Chicago, or a smaller town, you know, a rural town, or if you live in my hometown of St. Louis, you're seeing local artists, you're supporting local performers. And we talk a lot about food and market and restaurants, you know, buy local produce and go to local restaurants. Do that with your art choices too, once in a while. Don't just see like a traveling show from Broadway that tours and comes through and leaves your town. See a local theater. See a local theater company with local actors, people who live and work in your community and who you can interact with and talk with after the show. Because if we're going to talk about buy local, include your art in it too. Include sometimes supporting local artists and local work. And that means in Minnesota, going to see a show out in Orono at Yellow Tree, or seeing a show with Pangea here, or seeing shows with the local theater companies here, you know, that do so much, like Bad Mouth in St. Paul, and my own, and Shadow Horse. We have so many talented local artists, and that's true in a lot of places. I think it's surprising to people, like, oh, there's local actors and theater companies in my town. If you just look a little bit, you'll find them. And they would love for you to come and support their work.
Yeah. And not every company is going to have be producing your cup of tea, and that's fine. But you can, if you go around and just see it all and experience it, you can really find some unique artists that you follow and watch how they grow and where they started and where they end up. And to have audience members, speaking as an artist, to have audience members who say, well, I've seen you when you did your first show in town or your second show, and now you're doing your 25th. And my gosh, now you have an audience of 1,000, and I knew you when. Like, those stories happen in Minneapolis as well as on Broadway or LA or whatever. And just circling back to the Greeks, I mean, you know, they were the precursor to Shakespeare and, you know, to things that you see on television. So you have your Billions, your Peaky Blinders, like all of those shows, those dramatic elements came from the Greeks.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, those relationships, as weird as it sounds, and, oh, you know, Shakespeare is so, you know, out there and I have nothing in common with them. But man, you know, you've really hated somebody before or been really jealous of somebody, or maybe you've lost someone, and yeah, what do you do with that as a human being is in any great story. So I encourage people to look for that as well.
Yeah. No, Shakespeare was inspired by these Greek myths. I mean, like, famously, some people might have heard of Hecuba from the lines in Hamlet, where Hamlet is quoting about the player king, with Hecuba to he, or he to Hecuba. It's a famous line in Hamlet. So, you know, he looked to these stories too. And there's a reason why these resonate with us still today. They resonated to Shakespeare, and he wrote a play about the Trojan War with Troilus and Cressida. And he put stuff about Hecuba and Hamlet, which, you know, is arguably the greatest thing written in the English language. So it still connects with us. It still moves us today. And one of the great things about this Hecuba by Marina Carr is that it's in contemporary English. It's easily accessible. You understand every single word. I 100% promise you that. Again, you don't need to know anything about these Greek myths or the stories. You don't have to have read the Iliad. You don't have to have seen Troy. Watch this and you will understand everything that's going on, and you will understand every word that's going on. And I think the work that we do on stage, the way that this show has been directed with this amazing cast by our director, Dipankar, is the entire cast is on stage the entire show. None of us ever leave the stage.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The ensemble work that is at the heart of this, when you come and see it, you'll see all of us are on stage the entire show, and none of us ever leave. And we want to connect with you. Like, we're sitting on stage watching the action when we're not in the scenes, and then when there are scenes where everyone's involved in them, I think really the movement, the choreography, I think it will really make you go, oh, it's eye popping. We created some of this ensemble work together in rehearsals, like over 90 minutes, you know, some of our rehearsals, and we rehearsed this for over 7 weeks. We rehearsed 18 hours a week, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9, Saturdays, 1 to 4. We did like some of the first, for the first few weeks, you know, we did ensemble work and like movement exercises. We found pieces of text and we connected and created movements to go with this. Because in the script, there's nothing about chorus work. No stage directions about the cast is on stage the entire show. Found things and worked together and worked with our choreographer to make all sorts of interesting moments of movement, choreography, and things that happen across the stage at different points. And I think it makes for a visually exciting and interesting show.
And I think that's one of the things I'm most excited about to see this show. It's been a long time since I've seen a show full of movement and come alive through movement, because that's something that film and 2D, you know, Black Mirror screens can't give us. And it's, you really see the magic of theater come alive in that work, I feel like, as an audience member and also as a creator. I mean, you get to feel almost like a kid again, like you're building a fort, but it's actually, you know, the city of Troy. And then you get to, you know, crumble them down. And, you know, it just, it can be so magical if you let yourself go there. And I'm really excited to see the movement and to see, you know, what the different stage pictures are and how the ensemble works together. And you said you had a pretty large ensemble, right?
Yeah, it's a great size. It's a good sized ensemble. And we also have a live musician playing live music accompanying.
You never get that, people. You have to see this show. You never get a large ensemble doing movement work with a live musician. I mean, what a treat.
Yeah, she plays our musician, Bethany. She is like a character with this music that accompanies scenes. She's playing the violin. She's playing drum. She's got her, you know, computer and laptop with music and created for it. And there's it, bodies moving in space right in front of you and these choreographed movements and pieces with this live music, with the text going on at the same time. You know, it captures every sense, I think, that you get when you go to the theater. For your eyes, there's eye candy. There's something for your ears. There's the music. There's something for your heart and soul, the text and the movement together. And it all comes together. And everyone working together to create these stage pictures and tell this story with this beautiful and deeply moving script, I really do think it will grab you. I think it'll move you and you'll be like, just like, lost in it. Like the time will fly by. There's no intermission in there. And you'll be like, wow. And then when it's over, you're like, it's over. It's over. That, how long have we been here? Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. I can't believe it moved so fast. So I think it really does capture what we look for in theater when we want to see a show that, you know, dramatic, but isn't going to be like, oh, how long is this going to to be anything to entertain me. Yes, there will be stuff to entertain you. If you like stage movement, if you like choreography, if you like music, if you love seeing choral work, you will see all these things in this show.
That's excellent. This is giving me, I was actually thinking about this other day, about this the other day, Kevin, for moderation, for some movement.
My play moderation that we're going to be doing at the Hive in St. Paul this fall. I have some ideas. It's going to be very interesting and exciting. I'm looking at Matt and I'm going, we got, you know, because and obviously Amanda's going to be in that play. So find us at badmouthtc.com anytime, follow along. Subscribe to Mouthing Off if you're in the Twin Cities. I don't know if there's another show quite like this one where we're interviewing you know, theater artists. I know the Playwright Center has a podcast too. I should check that out and listen to them. Matt, you know, you're, like I said earlier, you're a repeat offender on the pod, but for people who are just hearing this episode, tell people a little bit about yourself and your passion for theater. Where did you kick off, and tell people about your journey? I know people would probably want to hear that.
Thank you. Sure. Well, I've been involved in theater, gosh, since I was a kid. I did, you know, shows at summer camp, but I never really got into it until going into my junior year of high school. The year before, I'd had a football and wrestling injury to my knee, and I had to have very painful knee surgery for torn ligaments and torn cartilage, and I was sidelined. And then I got cast in the play at my high school when I was rehabbing. And, you know, I did the play, and when I was healed, I played football again. And then after my senior year, football season was over, I did play. I did the Pops concert. I did the student directed one act, but I never really thought about it much. And then when I went to college at the University of Alabama, and I was asked, you know, what's your major going to be? And I was just like, theater, because it was the only thing that I really loved, like aside from playing sports and what I felt like a group, same camaraderie with, and that same like connection to people with. And I got what I think is an amazing theater education at the University of Alabama. I got to be in the state premiere of Angels in America. I got to be in King Lear. I got to do an amazing production of Waiting for Godot. And just last week, my friend Barry, who played, I played Lucky in that. My friend Barry, who played Pato in it, passed away just last week. Now half of that cast.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. And now half that cast has passed away. Like, my dear friend Eric, who played Vladimir Didi in it, passed away a couple of years before. And then my best friend from college, Jonathan, played Estragon Gogo in it. And it's hard to imagine, like, you know, when we did that now 27 years ago when I was 20 years old, like, those people are gone. But I treasure those memories. And I got a great theater education there in Alabama. And then I did, after I graduated, I spent a year in St. Louis, my hometown, like kind of like getting parts on my own outside of education, you know, trying to like see like, okay, I want to see if I can do this outside of getting cast in college. And I did. And then I lived in L.A. for about 8 years, and I did some film and TV work. So, again, I have nothing against film and TV. I've been in them. I like them. I enjoy the work.
They pay really well.
when you book,
hey, it's yeah. good. It's good work if you can get it. I'm just going to be totally tangential here. I've never done this. I have seen Dune Part 2 seven times, seven complete times, and I want to go again.
Oh my god. Wow.
But let's, you know, listen, we'll do a Dune pod another time. But it's, you know, it's a yes and thing. I mean, and that's the beautiful thing about, as an American, embracing theater. Like even if you weren't raised in or around it, getting a theater education and or just like becoming a patron of it will change your life. It will.
Yeah. When I was a kid, like, it wasn't like my parents weren't theater people, but my mom had been an English teacher, and my dad, to make a little extra money in college, like worked on building sets when his college, which was an all men's Catholic college, would work with a women's college, he and his best friend would work building sets. But they weren't theater people, but they did take me to see shows. Like, they'd take me to the Repertory Theater of St. Louis. They took me to the Muni, which is the big outdoor musical summer theater in St. Louis, which has been around for like about 80 plus years or something now. It's like a very famous venue and tradition. And we saw things like a Big River based on Huckleberry Finn. And we saw, Les Mis. And we saw at the Repertory Theater of St. Louis, I saw Miss Alliance, a George Bernard Shaw show. Hmm. I saw the Caine Mutiny Court Martial. So they exposed me to it when I was a kid, and my sister, and, they appreciated and respected the live performance aspects of it. They weren't knowledgeable about the behind the scenes work or what goes into the craft of it, but they respected and admired theater. And they would make it a point to like, for us to go, you know, to a show every summer at the Muni and to go to something that came around every year. And to take me to the Rep as I got older, those serious plays. They were very open about that. And that connected to me to it, and it made me interested in it. And it wasn't like something always in the front of my mind, but I always had a respect for it, even as a kid. And then when I graduated from college and spent that year in St. Louis and did regional theater there, and I lived in LA for 8 years, and I did film and television, and I was also in a theater companies. I was a member of Sacred Fools Theater in LA, and later the Arc Theater Company. And I was around people who had studied in Chicago and had gone to Tisch School for the Arts at NYU. And they were amazing. You know, they were making great theater in LA, which is not known for a theater town, but should be more respected as a theater town. They were making and creating great work at Sacred Fools and great work at Arc too. And I was in challenging and interesting plays and also doing late night comedy. I really feel like I earned my bones there because people there were so talented. It was hard to break through. And to get cast in a show there meant that like the director saw something. And I learned by watching. I learned a lot by watching really talented people. I was the house manager and facilities manager at Sacred Fools when I was 24 years old, which is kind of mind blowing to think about a 24-year-old being running the and concessions and parking lot for a theater in LA, a theater company in LA. But I was doing that. And because I was house manager, I would be at the lobby every night and I'd often stay and see shows and multiple times. And I learned a lot from watching and doing the late night comedy shows, like after the main stage shows. And that's how I learned. I learned by doing. I learned by watching these great artists so that by the time I had moved on and gotten married and had a kid and left Sacred Fools and had to move across town, I felt like, and joined Arc Theater, which was closer to my neighborhood, felt like I'd gotten a lot out of that. And then in 2004, in between that, I started my own company, Shadow Horse Theater, and produced and performed in a show there with us. And then when I moved to Minneapolis in 2008, to be closer to my daughter after she moved here with her mother, I brought Shadow Horse with me. And Shadow Horse has been around. We first produced a show in Minnesota for the 2010 Fringe. I want to say the 2010 Fringe. And we've produced about 8-9 main stage shows. We produced the monthly Drinking Game Minnesota show, which is returning to the Bryant Lake Bowl. After an absence of about, I guess it's been like 8 years, 9 years since we've been at the Bryant Lake Bowl.
One of the greatest full-time places in the world. One of the greatest little venues, but, and also like, let's go bowling, dude. Let's go bowling. It's so cool.
Yeah. No, the Bryant Lake Bowl is an awesome place. It's so cool. You know, it's got the heart and soul of like the Big Lebowski in it, but it's got a theater in it. And you know, you can bowl and then go see a play and have great food and drink. It's such a cool place to go to.
When I think of Minneapolis, that is like top five on my list of places I think about. I'm thinking about First Ave. I'm thinking about Bryant Lake Bowl. Personally, I'm thinking about like Up Down and that, you know, and then I'm thinking about some restaurants, but I'll just leave it at that. Yeah. It's iconic and it has the spirit of like, it's the vibe. And if you've never been to Minneapolis, definitely if you're here, you got to go to Bryant Lake Bowl. It's just a must visit type situation. Hey, Matt, get your plugs in again right now. You know, we've still got, you know, 15 minutes here, but say it again. What show are you doing? Where are you doing it? And then also plug Shadow Horse Theater, the URL.
Thank you. Yeah. The play we're talking about today on the wonderful Badmouth Theater podcast, Mouthing Off, is I'm performing as Agamemnon in Hecuba with Pangaea World Theater, and it is at the Southern Theater. We opened back on April 5th, and we're running through this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30, and Sunday, closing Sunday, April 21st at 2:30. And I'm going to give a shout out to some of my castmates really fast, because I want to give them recognition. Suzanne Victoria Cross is our lead, our title character, Hecuba, and she is wonderful. And she and I have a lot of scenes together, and we go on a real tough, it's a tough process. It's a tough journey for these characters. And she's asked for a better scene partner to work with. And other talented people in the show are Aaron Pidashreet and Guadino, Ernest Briggs, Tyler Stam, who I mentioned, who plays Odysseus, Nathan Berglund, 20 years old, fine young actor, Antonio Teodoro, Neil Shah, who's a 13-year-old actor, and Sudarshana Mukund, who is making her stage debut, and she does a wonderful job as well. It's a great cast, great, talented, diverse group of theater artists. Our director, Dipankar Mukherjee, just an amazing theater artist. You can read about him and his accomplishments and his work in the program for the show, and also learn more about them on the Pangea website. You can go just do a search for Pangea, P-A-N-G-E-A, Pangea World Theater, and you can learn about the show. There's a study guide you can read about if you want to. They just released an awesome trailer on their social media and on their YouTube channel that you can watch, with interviews with the cast and cool videos so you can see and learn about the show. And then my theater company is Shadow Horse Theater, and we produce A Drinking Game Minnesota. It's in its 12th year, monthly show, usually the first Saturday of the month. We'll be doing for Star Wars Day, May 4th, episodes of The Mandalorian at the Bryant Lake Bowl.
Yes.
Tickets are available now for that.
Hurry and get those. Those will be scooped up right quick. May the 4th be with you all. Yeah, get your tickets.
This is the way. Tickets. This is the way to spend May 4th is
this
to go
is the
see
way.
The Mandalorian, Drinking Game Minnesota.
And just to reiterate, it is PangeaWorldTheater.org. And there are shows 7:30 on Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and 2:30 p.m. on Sundays.
And Amanda and I, yes, and Amanda and I, immediately after this recording, we are going to be booking our tickets for Saturday. So if you want to stalk us, actually, you know what? Forget about it. Forget I said anything. But we
come
will be
hi.
There. Yeah. We're accessible people. We're not. I don't think we're too alienating or strange.
No,
we
just do a podcast. Yeah, come on the pod. Introduce yourself. Well, if you're an artist, we'll be there. Like, get yourself on the pod, or anybody in the cast or the artistic crew. Heck yeah.
You read my mind, Amanda, because that was the next thing I wanted to say. People who are in the Twin Cities, and even beyond the Twin Cities, if you want to come on and talk for an hour with us knuckleheads, right? We make our puns, right? Our Hecuba puns and all that. Just email badmouthtc@gmail.com. And that's anybody. You have a show. We talked to the big band group recently, Amanda. I bring my collaborators on from the other podcast I do, Art of Darkness. I had my screenwriting partner on. She's in London. He's in Michigan. It's, we're Twin Cities focused, but we're really, really open-minded. And again, we're a theater company, so the pod is theater focused, but it is a theater, arts, and culture podcast. And if you need a way to get your message out, you got a show, like, come on, because we want to meet you and we want to hear about it, and we want to support you and support art in the Twin Cities. I'd even talk to the manager of Bryant Lake Bowl. I would. Yeah. I'd like to hear, because, what's it like to run a funky bowling alley with the theater attached to it? There's an art and a craft to keeping a place like that afloat, right? Oh,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's culture. Location is culture. That's what I've decided on this episode.
My Lake Bowl, I've been in plays there besides my own, besides Drinking Game. I did shows there. There was a company here that did like a festival of short political plays, and I was in that a couple times. Our own company, Shadow Horse Theater, produced a play there, The Bitter Tears of Petra von Kant. So, like, it's a great venue to perform at. It's a theater. It just happens to be connected to a bowling alley and restaurant and bar. That's all. There's nothing, no rule says you can't have fun.
You don't have to put on your jacket and go outside to go to the bar or get a bite to eat. You can just walk across the place. It's great.
Oh, you get table service in the theater, so you can get your orders and drinks brought right to you while you're watching the show. It's amazing. That's why when I started Drinking Game here in Minneapolis, like, that was the place I first thought of, and where we first did our first ever show in February of 2020. 2012, The Princess Bride, the first ever show for a drinking game in Minnesota. It's where I thought of, it's the first place I thought of because I'd been in shows there. And I thought when they suggested the LA, a drinking game, like, can you find a place and want to do that in Minneapolis? The first place I thought of was the BLB. And it was our home for 3 years. And now we're returning to it. Really exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I'm very lucky and blessed that I ended up here. You know, and I've lived here now in Minneapolis for the last 15 years, and I've worked with great companies. I've gotten to work with Chameleon Theater Circle. I've gotten to work with Lyric Arts in Anoka. I got to be on a show at Theater in the Round. I worked with Theater Coup d'Etat when they were here, and I've worked in other places in Minnesota too. I got to do All My Sons by Arthur Miller up at Pioneer Playhouse in St. Cloud. I got to do Brighton Beach Memoirs at the Paul Bunyan Playhouse in Bemidji. So, but the Twin Cities, I'm very lucky that I've gotten to perform here and be in shows with big companies and small companies, gotten to perform the Minnesota Fringe Festival 15, 16 times over, you know, like, gosh.
Raked in the awards while he was at it.
Yeah, I've lost count about how many Fringe shows I've done. I think it's like 16 or 17. Last year I did two, and I think three or four times I've done two Fringe shows in the same year. So, but I mean, this is such a great community for the performing arts. And I've been really lucky and grateful and blessed to work with a lot of talented people and meet wonderful theater folk here and audiences and great audience.
We do. There are the people who come out and support the arts in the Twin Cities are diehards because often the weather is prohibitive. Sometimes the Vikings are going to go and lose. The Twins might lose to the Yankees. There's a lot of other entertainment options, that'll help, make you miserable. And again, battling the weather and driving in this town to go see a show, like, I'm shocked. I mean, one of our great sort of collaborators, on this pod is his History Theater. They send people our way pretty regularly, and we love that. And, that recent kind of like late winter blizzard that we had, they had a packed house for one of their recent shows. I was just like, this is incredible. And people really have to try here. It isn't like a market like LA or like New York, or even a place like Miami where it's like, it's maybe a little more, it's easier to get it, like, especially New York, like it's easier to kind of get around. And anyway, so yeah, no, we have great audiences and people who like take pride in the fact that this is an artistic town. It's a real thing here. So I'm glad that you're as a transplant, Matthew, you can appreciate that. I too am a transplant from North Dakota.
Yeah. I've never forgotten, like, the first show I ever did here in when I moved to the Twin Cities was The Foreigner at Lyric Arts. And it was in January, February of 2009.
Were you the foreigner?
I was.
Spoiler. Yes.
I was the foreigner. I love that play. It's so fun to do. In college, I played the Reverend, but here I got to play the hero, the foreigner, the title character. And it's just a joyous, fun play to do. But I wondered about, like, is the weather going to, scare people off in January, February in Minnesota? But we had so many people, like, we had packed houses for this show. And after the show at Lyric Arts at that time, like, you'd go in the lobby, our cast, like, after we bowed on stage, we'd run up the stairs and stand in the lobby and talk with people. And I'd never really done that before. And it was just amazing. Like, people in the neighborhood in Anoka and around the surrounding areas in Coon Rapids and near there were like, saying how much they enjoyed it, shaking my hand and talking what a fun time they had and how hard they laughed. They were such a grateful, awesome audience. And they were just, they're wearing their boots and heavy jackets and they'd driven in the snow and wearing their stocking caps and, wearing their wild and Vikings gear. And they had a great time at this show, at this comedy. It helps that it's a fun, hilarious, wonderful script and show, but they had a great time and they were such great audiences. And ever since then, I've been like, sometimes I get a little cynical and I'm like, oh, audience, some audience people, you experience that. But on the whole, those audiences every night were amazing. And audiences in general here people are so supportive, and they do brave the cold. And sometimes they brave, like, they'll go like, it's a beautiful day out, but I'm going to go see the Sunday matinee. And
ooh,
then
you're right.
Have a nice
right.
Something in the morning. I'll go right. see a Sunday matinee, and then I'll go out after and enjoy the evening, you know, and everything.
And they brave the social ostracism that comes with missing the Vikings lose, right? If you fail, Matt, this has been really enjoyable. We have to wind down here. We have a few sure. more minutes. I wanted to ask you one more question, kind of a technical question, or a craft question. Do you have like a guiding principle for your acting, the craft of your acting? If there was one or maybe two or three guiding principles that really move your work, what you do?
It's a great question. Some of the students today and last week also asked us about this. I think at the heart of my craft, when I work, starts with script. I want to pull as much from the script as possible. I want to take what the text. I'm going to read that script over and over again, and then I'm going to memorize it by writing my lines down and recording my lines, and I'm going to try and get it into my bones. And then I'm going to listen to my director, and I like to think of myself, or I have been called, a director's actor. And I'm going to, you know, work with that director to find a way to tell that story. And when I want to get at the heart and soul of a character, I really study what I've been given in the text, and I work to make that happen. And in rehearsal, when I go to rehearsal, I go to work. Like, yeah, I'll be, you know, on breaks, I'll socialize and I'll talk with people. I'm not one for standing on stage, chit-chatting and everything. Like, I want to work. I want to get, you know, my lines connected to my muscle memory so that I'm saying them and know where I'm at on stage and moving with them. I guess the other thing that I think of when I think about the craft of my work is, always want to give the best performance I possibly can, and I want to make every show better, and I never want to stop learning and feeling I'm getting from the people I'm on stage with. I want to be in the moment and listen to them, and I want my reactions to come naturally and organically, and I'm going to feel that audience too, and I want to make sure that I'm doing the best work I can, because I only have one chance. You know, every show is different. You know, the show that we did this morning, as Suzanne said, is not going to be the same show y'all will see Saturday. And it won't be the same show that had been done the night before Friday. The same show that we did 2 weeks ago. You know, it's evolved. It's changed. And, you know, some people say consistency is the death of good acting. But I want to be consistently good. I don't want to try and repeat things and try and copy what I did before. I want it to be natural and part of that human connection that I'm trying to create to that character. And even when I play loathsome characters and evil characters, I still want to find something in them that's human and make them connect some way to an audience and to myself.
That's a beautiful answer. We will not top that. Hecuba, Pangea World Theater at the Southern Theater in Minneapolis through April 21st. And Amanda and I are going to be there Saturday. We're excited. We're going to put our butts in the seats. The great Matt Sachs, Shadow Horse Theater, Drinking Game Minnesota. I'm Kevin Kautzman. This is Amanda Forstrom. Amanda, where can people find Mouthing Off? Frogtown Radio, right? 94.1.
Frogtown Radio, 94.1. You got it.
And Minnesota Playlist and all the socials.
Absolutely.
You know where to find us. We are Badmouth Theater Company, badmouthtc.com. Signing off.
Bye-bye.